and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, Brooklyn, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, lurking conservatives. Look at this crowd. We're at the Tea Lounge in Brooklyn. On Park Slope at Union and 7th.
Yeah.
There's literally hundreds of people here, Riley. Good morning, folks. Wow, what a morning. All right.
Wow.
All right, thank you. Thank you. Look at that. America's jealous. Everybody wants to be in Brooklyn.
That's right. Everybody should want to be in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I don't get out to Brooklyn enough, man. I live in Queens, which is the unhip borough. I mean, you say you're from Queens, you might as well be saying, I'm on heroin.
Wait a minute.
No, I'm just saying that. It's stigmatized. I don't know why you can't get hipsters to Queens. I don't understand it, Riley.
Well, I don't know, but I used to live in Brooklyn.
You did?
Where in Brooklyn? I used to live. Anybody know where New Lots Avenue is? All right. East New York.
Woo! Yes, I've been there.
Yeah, there you go. We're in Park Slope, though. This is a great part of Brooklyn to be in. This is a really homey spot, too, the Tea Lounge.
Yeah,
this reminds me of about 25 clubs I used to go to.
Couches.
It's a beautiful place.
There's people sleeping here. There are bunk beds. It's unbelievable. Come down. There are bean bags.
They're fans. They work on their own.
There's a full bar right over there, Riley. I'm just waiting for the first guy to just throw it.
Oh, maybe wait a minute. There's two people there already.
It's hilarious. That weird rationalization that comes from alcoholics. Well, maybe it's not too early.
No.
I've been up for 2 hours. I mean, breakfast is breakfast. Hey, we got a great show coming up for you today. We've got Gifford Miller, who's running for mayor here in New York City. So if you have any questions for him and you're out there driving around, come down to the Tea Lounge here in Park Slope on Union and 7th. And you can ask Gifford Miller yourself. We have author and filmmaker Nelson George. Brilliant guy. He's going to be talking about his new book and some other things.
And a lifelong Brooklynite.
Yes, we're going to get into the murder trial. Not the murder trial, but
the civil trial in the Biggie Smalls case.
Rap pioneer DMC, Daryl McDaniels, is going to be here in a couple hours.
Yeah.
So if you want to come down and talk to him or listen to him talk, he will be here shortly.
Yeah.
So look, you want to get into some news, Riley?
Yeah.
All right, buddy. So
I'm happy. I'm a happy man today. That geek with the oxygen in his nose is going to get 60 years.
Yeah, that's no kidding. It's about time.
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing to me that this is like he was convicted 40 years to the day of the killing. Is
41,
that
yeah. 41 years to the day.
And this is Circuit Judge Marcus Gordon sentenced him to 80 years. This is former KKK leader.
60.
Year.
It's 80, 60.
It
maximum
years?
60. Yeah, 20 years.
20.
Yeah, 20.
Three for three guys, 20 on each manslaughter case. On each manslaughter
On each manslaughter count, and he deserves every day of it. I hope he's rotten in jail. And he called himself a Christian, too. You know, they called him
Pastor. He's a preacher.
He was a preacher.
But that was the horrendous thing. But not. It was weird to me that the brother, Ben Chaney, James Chaney's brother, one of the victims, actually his younger brother said, quote, I want to thank God today that we saw preacher killing in a prison uniform taken from the courthouse to the jailhouse. That people still in their heads got their ideas that this guy is a legitimate preacher.
Some kind of holy man.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. And Judge Gordon, the guy who tried this case, was pretty brilliant because he showed no mercy in terms of killing being in a wheelchair, being injured, or being in any way a sympathetic character. He just said, quote, I have to pass a sentence to a person who is 80 years old, a person who has suffered a serious injury. There are some of you in the courtroom that would say a sentence of 10 years would have been a life sentence. I heard the evidence of the case. Each life has value. Each life is equally as valuable as the other life, and I have taken that into consideration. The three lives should absolutely be respected and treated equally. So he went for the max, even though this guy was trying to be a sympathetic character. Good for him.
Yeah. So the Edgar Ray killing, we say, see ya.
That's right. And the thing is that, like, Riley, this guy is the only person who faced the state murder rap.
Yes.
And seven
Everyone
other guys.
Else had, they got they ended up being convicted on federal civil rights charges. None of them served more than, I believe, 6 years, 6 or 7 years tops.
Now tell me about this. Like Karl Rove made these comments yesterday.
Oh, that's deep.
And it speaks to the New York State Conservative Party, the neocon death cult Goebbels. Karl Rove took some time to take some shots at liberals and to reheat the hate and social dialogue. Now, what I didn't know about this New York Conservative Party is that this guy, the head of the party, is somebody that you've had a history with.
Well, I know him. His name is Mike Long. Those of you who don't know him, he owns the liquor store out in Bay Ridge.
And this is not...
Y'all know where Bay Ridge is, don't you? All right. Well, that's where Mike Long made his money. It's interesting that a guy who's so anti-abortion and upholds conservative values made his dough selling booze to people. But that's okay.
But the New York Conservative Party, just to flesh it out for people, has nothing to do necessarily with the Republican Party in New York.
Well, what they do is kind of gang tackle. They're kind of a line that people can get on the ballot. And in many cases, people like George Pataki and others here in New York end up running on the conservative line because there are people who don't want to deal with the moderate wing of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
So they vote on the conservative line.
I get it. So they're sort of, in some respects, they're kind of an extension of the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade. They're fundraisers for the base. They're the Catholic version that's why Rove is playing to them, is because they are mobilized on a grassroots level in a religious way.
Yeah? Well, yeah. And Rove wants to maintain that the love affair that Bush has with the conservative base while actually giving them absolutely nothing.
What's baffling to me is that with Democrats actually taking some stands, approval ratings for the president down, public opinion shifting on the war, the public slowly waking up and feeling like they've been roofied and raped by the policies of this administration, Rove decides he should dip back into the well of blood of the victims of 9/11 to remind people that this administration will do and use anything to stay in power. He said, quote, liberals saw the savagery of 9/11 attacks and wanted to prepare indictments and offer therapy and understanding for our attackers. Conservatives, quote, saw savagery of 9/11 and the attacks and prepared for war. It was a war that they were preparing for before 9/11, but that doesn't seem to be important to this guy. That they were able to facilitate by letting 9/11 happen, and the country that created the 19 of the attackers has been given no reprisals, but only more business. But I guess that's another issue. This guy's heinous.
Well, look, what Karl Rove was there. Karl Rove, you know, plans everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's very clear that Karl Rove didn't say this off the top of his head. He said it for a reason. He said it for a purpose. And if you want to look at why, the fact is Bush's approval ratings on Iraq are going through the floor. The whole rationale for going over there in the first place and going to war is in serious question. So what does Karl Rove do? He issues an unprovable, unproven statement, a statement that's full of crap. Remember,
let's make them hate liberals again. That should get the blood going.
Yeah. Remember that all these people in Congress, liberals, voted right along with the president to actually give him the authorization to go to war. So why would he talk about, things like therapy trying to be nice?
And also the idea that that Democrats had that moment where they were like, well, we should find out what really happened here. We should find out, who's responsible for this, as opposed to them just, beginning the lie, starting the movement towards war against anybody and making a state of eternal war to continually, put money into the pockets of their military corporate backers. I mean, it was almost immediate. The way that this guy exploits the victims of 9/11 is pathetic and shameful.
It is pathetic and shameful, but remember that he got a standing ovation from the audience he delivered this speech to. And you know what they did as soon as they sat down? Maybe even before, they reached into their wallets and they donated their money. And that's what Karl Rove is also about. He wants to make sure that these folks, and the Conservative Party is a party that takes money in relatively small donations. Big corporations don't fund the Conservative Party. Little old ladies in many instances donate $10, $15, $20, $25. Karl Rove wants to make sure that those folks stay on the bus and they never get the idea of running someone to the right of the Republicans that Karl Rove wants to back.
The Supreme Court made a decision that couldn't have a direct effect on tenants and business owners here in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
We're going to get into that coming up next. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. It's 15 past the hour.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Experts now. 800-396-9711. 800-396-9711. That's 800-396-9711.
We are broadcasting live, as you can tell, from the Key Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. So if you want to come down, we're giving away coffee, but Man, I think we're going to have to stop. This is crazy. All right, so we're giving away coffee. As you can tell, these people are jacked up, my friends.
Uh-oh.
There are couches and bean bags. There's a Galaga machine here. Do you know how many hours I spent during college playing Galaga, Riley? Do you know how many hours?
Quite a few, I would imagine.
Unbelievable. Like, hours. Hours.
Really?
Yeah, and Brendan's going to take me on after this, I think.
Uh-oh.
Yeah? Is that all right? So please, come down. We're going to have a lot of great guests on the show. Gifford Miller, who's running for mayor, is going to be here to tell us how he's going to possibly win. Author and filmmaker Nelson George is going to be coming down. Rap pioneer Daryl McDaniels, a.k.a. DMC of Run DMC, will be here in a little while.
Yeah.
It's an amazing place. There's a full bar here, but I was told by Greg, the owner, that usually people don't tap into that right at 6:20.
No.
But it's available. I'm just saying that if you're sad, you're depressed, you ran out of antidepressants, or you're just reacting to what Rove said yesterday and you need to drink it away, you can come down here or you can fight. That's up to you. So, Riley, apparently operating at the behest of the oligarchy, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 ruling yesterday, says it's okay to seize people's homes and businesses against their will for private development.
Yep, that's exactly what they said. In fact, Maron, can I have your apartment? I want to build an office ball.
But what is that? John Paul Stevens said local officials, not federal judges, know best in deciding whether a development project will benefit the community. Local officials who are owned by business interests. All right. States are within their rights to pass additional laws restricting condemnations if residents are overly burdened. But now Sandra Day O'Connor, in a dissenting voice of reason, says, quote, any property may now be taken for the benefit of another private party, but the fallout from this decision will not be random. The beneficiaries are likely to be those citizens with disproportionate influence and power in the political process, including large corporations and development firms. So let me get this. The poor get the short end of the stick of this?
Is that yet again, the poor get the short end of the stick. You
give us your house. We need a Bennigan's.
Yeah, exactly. You can live in your house. I believe in what in the case that was involved here that the court heard, one woman had lived in her house for 87 years.
But now,
87.
Let me get this. So they basically what they're saying is that they can control what the offer is. Like, they will make an offer and say, we'll give you $20,000 for your house. And if you say, that's not enough, I'm not leaving, they go, sorry, here come the bulldozers.
Yeah, that's called eminent domain. And before they said that, you know, eminent domain could only be used if there was some public interest use. Now they're saying public interest use can mean almost anything.
So they're throwing a bone to the business interests as opposed to the people.
Well, yeah, they're throwing a big bone to the business interests, and it's going to hit home not far from where we are here in Brooklyn at the T Lounge.
If they get, like, if this happens, do they get a condolence letter from the Supreme Court on Supreme Court stationery or no?
No, just a check.
All right.
A very small check.
But now this guy, Bruce Ratner.
Hey. Oh.
The developer who's slowly eating up most of Brooklyn wants to put a stadium here.
He wants to put a gigantic arena here for the New Jersey, what are now the New Jersey Nets. They're going to abandon Jersey. They're going to come over here. And, you know, it has split Brooklyn right down the middle. And, you know, at a point, you have to decide what kind of place Brooklyn is going to end up being. They're talking about building all kinds of apartments and affordable housing, but we all know what they mean when they say affordable housing.
And they're hurting our buddy Dan Pashman here, who, is hiding his drinking problem. But nonetheless, his favorite bar, Fred's Bar, Freddy's Bar could be plowed under in the name of this stadium. And Pashman?
It's true, Mark. Freddy's is one of my favorite bars. It's one of Brendan P.W. McDonald's favorite bars. And, the people who want to build this stadium, they like to say, oh, there's nothing there. It's just some old rail yard. It's nothing. It's nothing at all. It doesn't matter. The fact is that it's a neighborhood, and people live there, and Brendan and I like to drink there. And if you go to Freddy's Bar, you will see signs all over there about eminent domain. There's articles on the wall by the men's room urinal. You can get an education if you go to the bathroom at Freddy's.
So let me get this straight, Dan. If they wanted to, if the state officials made an offer to Freddy's Bar, to the owner of Freddy's Bar, and just said, look, we're just going to give you $10,000 for the bar, he has to take it. It's like coercion almost.
Exactly. As long as it falls within a very broad definition of being in the public good,
mm-hmm.
which is really pretty much by the state officials' definition in Bruce Ratner's good,
yeah.
then that qualifies.
But how is feeding alcohol to people not in the public's good? I don't understand.
Mark, you're preaching to the choir.
Look, you know, one of the things that's going to happen here, if you look in Brooklyn and you look at the other developments that Bruce Ratner has done, exactly what have we gotten out of them? Chuck E. Cheese? Houlihan's.
Starting to look like Queens.
You know, the Burlington Coat Factory, Marshall's. These are all legitimate businesses, but do you have to stomp out other legitimate businesses in the public interest in order to do this? They are going to condemn these properties, and they're going to evict people and businesses from the spaces that they're now in. As our friend said, wake up, sheeple.
That's right. We got some wake up, sheeple buttons from a fan. Casey brought these down today.
Yes,
our buddy, Richard, the Flemmy Laffer, is here from last week. Nice to see you, Richard. Gabe is here.
Yeah.
Yes, he has. He brings us CDs.
Hey, and let me tell you something.
There's literally 300 or 400 people here.
That's right.
That we have never seen before, which is which is unbelievable, because we're down here at Tea Lounge in Parkville, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. Please come down, really. As I said before, we got Gifford Miller, who's running for mayor. He's going to explain himself. Nelson George is going to come down, the filmmaker in office. We were so excited about Gifford Miller because I like saying
Gifford
his name.
Gifford Miller?
Yeah, it's a good name. And rap pioneer Del McDaniels, a.k.a. DMC.
Yeah.
So, Riley, did you see the story that now home prices are like at an all-time high right now? At an all-time high, and you're making out like a bandit. Did you sell your house or what?
I'm not complaining.
Come on. What happened? Did you sell it? Is it done? Is it a done deal?
It's not a done deal. I'm not allowed to talk about it's classified.
Well, you're not allowed to talk about it. If you do, you're going to have to kill everybody here? What is it, a military secret or something?
That's right. There are people outside waiting.
Come on.
No, it's not a done deal yet, so I don't like to jinx things.
Okay, all right.
But I am buying it.
So it's a superstition thing.
It's a superstition thing.
Just want to make sure it wasn't a legal problem.
Look, I already had one offer, crash and burn, all right?
Okay, all right. So. Enough said.
Enough said.
So I got to sell my house.
Yeah, you got. Well, this is the time to sell.
Is anybody looking for a house in the middle of the barrio on a hill in Highland Park, Los Angeles? Anybody?
Anybody? Come on, we're taking bids.
It's nice if you come around the back way. All right. All right.
We'll start at $600,000.
That would be great. Anybody? Oh, there's a guy pulling out his wallet. Hey, what's $600,000
once?
Could you imagine that? Just a guy just pulling out his wallet and whipping out $600,000.
Wouldn't
that be great?
I'm not sure if he'd have to have a really large wallet, but if he wrote a check, it'd be.
Look, folks, we got the iNews 5000 coming up. We've got DMC from Run DMC, Daryl McDaniels, coming up. We're at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn. Come on down. We're at Union Street and 7th Avenue. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Tradition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
On the disgraceful new Ed Klein book. That's next on Rankin.
On Air America Radio.
Before past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
We're at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn. At Union Street in 7th Avenue. You're listening to Air America Radio. Look at these people. See what free coffee does? This is unbelievable.
Thousands.
We got people hanging. We got buttons and giveaways. And some woman made her own buttons. It said wake up sheeple on it.
Yeah. And we got this gift too.
That's right. That's right.
From Thomas.
Dan Passman. Don't encourage him forever. Thomas just came up with his mom and made us these two beautiful paper wallets. Look at that. Isn't
that
nice?
Yo, Thomas.
With a little piece of Japanese candy inside.
Yeah.
Good morning, sugar. That's what I say.
That's it.
Candy for breakfast for me. So, look, I think it's time now. Hold on, Riley. I dropped my...
Uh-oh. What did you drop?
As you people recognize, and they're going to play along with me here, this, of course, this machine, this bright, shiny machine, is the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. And sometimes, you know, when we read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying, so we like to feed it into the translator. And to do the intro, as I promised, here live is Brendan P.W. McDonald. From the Associated Press, lawmakers to question Rumsfeld on future of U.S. troops in Iraq. Lawmakers to question Rumsfeld on future of U.S. troops in Iraq. Translation, Rumsfeld to question lawmakers about questionable questioning tactics vis-a-vis the questions. From the Associated Press, Southern Baptist to stop boycotting Disney because they pay benefits to gay workers. Southern Baptist to stop boycotting Disney because they pay benefits to gay workers. Translation, Baptists finally accept that it's a small world with gay people in it after all. Happy Gay Pride Week, folks.
Yes.
From the Associated Press, poll says Clinton McCain favorites for 2008. Put that in there. Poll says Clinton McCain favorites for 2008. Translation, McCain outraged by smear campaign allegations that he is a lesbian. Now, you know, down here in Brooklyn, you know, I have to be honest. I just don't come around here a lot. I got nothing against it. I just live in Queens, and I have no car. But it's beautiful to be here. And we noticed that there is, across the street, a food co-op, the Park Slope Food Co-op.
Yeah.
So we figured we'd engage the local businesses here. The Park Slope Food Co-op has 12,000 members. It first opened its doors back in 1973. The members decide what to sell and what not to sell. And all members have to work two or three quarter hours every 4 weeks in order to stay members in good standing. Joining us now to give us a lowdown on co-op life, co-op sales, is General Manager Joe Holtz. How are you, Joe?
Hey, Joe.
I'm fine. Thanks for inviting me.
Sure. Now, I just want to ask right out of the gate, it's absolutely essential that all food co-ops have a white guy with dreads working there. Do you have a white guy with dreads?
No.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's surprising.
What kind of co-op are you?
All right, well, look, how is the Park Slope Co-op different from other co-ops? I used to live in San Francisco. Rainbow was a huge co-op out there. Is it similar to that? Do you know?
Well, the Rainbow Co-op is a worker-owned co-op, and the Park Slope Food Co-op is a consumer-owned co-op, so all 12,000 people own it equally.
So you're not a socialist organization. You're more of a capitalist organization.
No.
All right, I'm trying to understand.
We're different in that we require members to work, and by doing that, we could replace the biggest expense that most stores have, which is labor,
okay,
as much as possible.
Okay.
So we have a much smaller staff. Given the volume of business, another co-op might have 200 staff. We have about 50 staff.
Okay.
And each member has to participate. And the idea is to try to make really good food, really good fresh food, affordable.
Okay.
By and large, it's not that affordable.
So is it organic food primarily, or?
The fresh fruits and vegetables are about three-quarters or more organic. But that's because members have spoken over the years by showing what they're buying.
Okay. You know. Now, who decides what you sell and what you don't? Is it just the individual members of the co-op? Do you have a board? Who passes on the food?
Well, there's a general meeting and a board. But mostly on a day-to-day basis, the staff decides on the food. Mm. But the members, there's a suggestion book, and members call up, and members talk, and the members are listened to.
Do you have the meat?
We have meat, but like we didn't get meat until that was voted. So that was voted at a monthly general meeting.
That must have been an interesting vote.
Yeah.
Did that go back and forth a lot?
It was interesting, but we just don't have any old meat. We have meat where the animals have been treated better and mostly from local farms.
Massaged to death?
There is a contradiction there, I understand.
I understand, yeah. There's some meat where they actually erotically asphyxiate the cow in the middle of masturbation, just so, like, right at that moment.
Yeah.
And that,
we voted at our general meeting not to have foie gras, if that's a...
That's good. You're against force-feeding geese, which is important,
yeah,
but not against killing other animals. I appreciate what you're
saying. Not even against killing the geese, but just not those geese.
As long as you have principles, Joe, that's all I'm looking for.
Right. We do. We have principles. In fact, we on June 1st, we started getting all of our electricity from wind energy.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
So now you have like 25 of your employees are up on the roof right now, like blowing fans for their
It's pretty complicated, but no.
How does that work?
Yeah, explain it.
You're getting wind energy. What does it come in packages? Stored up from the Palm Springs windmills?
You know those little cans?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're destroying the ozone with aerosol, but the lights are on. All right.
It's not that.
Okay.
No.
I'm kidding. I'm just busting your chops.
But we do have an environmental consciousness. Like
we use
a certain kind of air conditioning system that doesn't use CFCs that hurt the ozone.
Right.
We use an old-fashioned ammonia absorption system for our air conditioning. So
now you're losing me with the chemistry.
But the organization, the co-op is very environmentally conscious. It's one of
the things. That's great. Yeah. And you've been at it a long time. I mean, in 73, you at another time had probably hair, lots of it, long hair. I picture you with the tie-dye and the sandals and, you know, the first five members that look like, you know, the SDS. You know what I mean? But
some of that is true about me. But not all.
You sell beer? You sell alcohol?
Yeah, well, that was a vote, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The one alcoholic hippie
said. That was the vote that failed in the 1980s and won in the late 90s.
One in the late 90s. Okay.
But these are business decisions, a lot of them. I mean, it's not...
Well, that wasn't a business decision. That was members stating whether they wanted the co-op to carry beer or not.
But there's some interest in it being a profitable business, yes?
Well, every organization...
Nothing wrong with being profitable.
No, I know, but our goal is not to make profit. Our goal is to get as much savings into members back to them as possible.
Okay, I'm in. How much do I have to...
In other words, we try to keep prices low on a daily basis.
Okay. Okay.
And we don't the savings comes as you shop.
Okay.
And we try to have very low prices.
Do you have the snap
and the
peas
members
over there?
Deserve that. Yeah. They work for it.
Oh, good. Do you have the snap peas over there now? They're in season.
Yes.
So you do?
We have local organically grown snap peas.
Oh, that's great.
From upstate New York. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
From a farmer that we deal directly with.
Well, thanks for bringing some over because
Right.
Yeah.
Appreciate
it.
He didn't know you loved snap beans, Marin.
I said it yesterday.
I didn't come with gifts, although I think it was great that Thomas brought that gift before.
That's it. Thomas brought us these lovely wallets, and now I'd like you to go fill it with snap peas across the street. Joe Holtz, ladies and gentlemen, the manager of the Parksville Food House. Thanks a lot for coming. I personally love food co-ops. When I lived in San Francisco, I would go to the Rainbow because I have this thing where if I'm in an environment with food that looks good and looks healthy, that somehow or another I will become healthy just by proximity to the food.
Oh, like by osmosis?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's by osmosis. I'd like to think of it as maybe a photosynthesis. Like I'm sort of absorbing the energy from the food. Man, I got hippie in me, man.
Oh, man, you sure do. Can you go out in the street and see if you can absorb some energy from downtown Brooklyn?
Yes, I will, Mark. Are you trying to get rid of me? Maybe I'll go park your car, which is out of
bus stop. No, it's in the right place. I put it in the parking lot across.
Okay, man.
I'm fast, man. I don't play.
All right, so what we've got coming up? Is it time for the dog of the week? Oh, my God, here we go.
Wait a minute.
Is that coming up?
That's coming up.
You're confusing me, Brendan.
Don't scare me.
I've got a process here. You're making me look like an amateur, for God's sake. So let me do it right. Let's just erase that. Hey, coming up, Riley, guess what?
What?
It's the dog of the week.
Really?
Yeah, so maybe everybody should stay tuned for that.
You got it.
That's coming up next here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's 43 past the hour. We're at Sea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union and 7th. Come on down.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
243-1483. That's 1-800-243-1483. Call Stop Sign right now. 1-800-243-1483.
Good morning. It's Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America. We're broadcasting live from the Sea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue. Come on down, folks. We've got Daryl McDaniels, a.k.a. DMC, is going to be with us in a little while. Gifford Miller, mayoral candidate for here in New York. Go and ask him some questions. For more info on the Tea Lounge, go to Tea Lounge New York or Tea Lounge NY. .com. It's an amazing place. They got another branch, store across the way.
Yeah.
Right? Huh? So we got some here. Someone here has a question. Is it yes, sir? Do you have a question of some sort?
My name's Ted. I'm from Nebraska.
Oh yeah.
It's me. And I just wanted to say, you know, Karl Rove was absolutely right in what he was saying about liberals the other night.
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when... Help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
From Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons. It's 34 past the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, building a gulag? Give us a call.
So Mark the Shark is excited about the new Hillary book. Oh, baby. Yeah, it's called The Truth About Hillary. What she knew, when she knew it, and how far she'll go to become president. Listen up, Patriots. This book says she's a lesbian.
Hello, this is Hillary Clinton. I'm a liar and a cheater and a murderer, but mostly I like girls and higher taxes and appeasing terrorists and girls. Oh, whoops, my penis fell off. Uh-oh.
Go, go, go!
Hey, cheer up, Hillary. Let's hit the singles bar. You can be my wingman. Hey, Hillary. Hey, Hillary. It's Gay Pride Week. How's that wound? That's my girl. You know what the parade of gay liberals sound like, don't you? And that's why those people shouldn't be allowed to get married. That's what I say. Hey, it's 36 past the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Feminazis,
right, you are, girl caller. Bill O'Reilly was right when he said this.
All those clowns over at the liberal radio network, we could incarcerate them immediately. Will you have that done, please? Send over the FBI and just put them in chains?
Yeah, one problem. You didn't go far enough, Bill. You bring those Air America clowns to my house, and I'll show you some justice. Had enough, Franken? How about you, Randy Rose? Hey, Mark Riley, rise and shine. Hey, and I didn't forget you, Marin. Tell that joke of bananas, clown boy. Hey, it's 38 after the hour. Time for the neocon farm report. Hey, if Hillary gets to be the president, look for a brand new crop of interns. Good news, girls. This time you won't have to worry about getting anything on your dress. Have a cigar. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith in just a second.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Wright and Early.
Blackout. Are you all right, Marin?
Yeah.
You're back?
Everyone was looking at me weird, kind of like they couldn't hear it or something.
They're still looking at you weird.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. So you know what time it is now, Riley?
I'm not sure. What time is it, Marin?
It's time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
All right. The first week of summer provided us with a number of candidates in our canine competition. There's Karl Rove, who accused liberals of wanting to coddle the 9/11 attackers. Gee, were those the same liberals who stood behind Rove's boss when he wanted to go to war in the first place? Then there's the president's brother, Florida Governor Jeb Bush. He now wants an investigation into how long it took Michael Schiavo to call for help after his wife Terry collapsed 15 years ago.
Wow.
That would be back in 1990. Good luck, Jeb. But for sheer doggishness in the pursuit of personal ambition, nobody can beat Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist of Tennessee.
Yes.
Frist hasn't yet been able to get his troops in line behind John Bolton, Bush's terminally flawed nominee for UN ambassador. Democrats stopped the GOP effort to force a final vote on Bolton. The next day, Frist told reporters he wouldn't be scheduling another vote on this loser. Then he went to lunch at the White House with his Republican cronies and the president. Lo and behold, Frist came out of the lunch a changed man. The president expects an up or down vote, and by God, that's what Frist now intends to give him. That's right, a complete reversal of field in the time it takes to wolf down a D.C. lunch. And for what? Just remember, Bill Frist is one of those seeking to curry favor for the 2008 presidential sweepstakes. And I say, lots of luck. From where we sit, he's coming out of the gate a straight-up loser. Senator Bill Frist, you are the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
If you're wondering out there in Radio Land, we're broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue.
Yeah.
Please come down. We've got a great show still ahead of us. Gifford Miller, a New York City council speaker who's running for mayor. He's going to come and tell us about his dream.
Oh.
I keep busting up. I'm busting on the hippie from across the street. What's wrong with me?
I don't know, man.
Hey, look, who am I today? Look, I'm wearing a little Buddha bracelet. Anyway,
okay.
Rap pioneer DMC of Run DMC is going to be here in just a little while. We got author and filmmaker Nelson George to talk about his new book. That's all coming up. I'm going to be performing at Bananas Comedy Club in New Jersey.
Yeah.
It's weird. I talked to the woman from Bananas last night, and she seemed like pissed off at me. She was like, yeah, I heard you on the radio. And I started to realize, like, oh, my God, I'm sort of condescending when I'm saying, like, New Jersey. Like, I'm like, hey, let's go to New Jersey, you know.
Are you just noticing that, huh?
Well, let me try and backpedal a little bit. Can I? I was born in New Jersey. If it weren't for, I climbed out of the primordial sludge of New Jersey myself, and evolved in the first 6 years of my life. I lived in Wayne, New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Sure, it was the greatest time of my life.
His childhood home is now a strip mall.
New Jersey. If it weren't for New Jersey, I wouldn't be the man that I am today.
There you go. And everybody at Bananas is going to find out about
it. Hold on, I'm tearing up a little bit. You know what's weird is that when I lived in New Jersey, my grandmother used to take us to the Willowbrook Mall.
Uh-oh.
It was like the great thing. It's like, we're going to Willowbrook, and we'd be so excited to go to Willowbrook. And then they built Paramus Park Mall. And this was, you have to understand something. This was one of the malls that it had like the first food court ever. So my grandmother was like, we're going to the mall, and you can eat food from around the world. And the food court was the greatest thing that ever happened to my brother and I.
Congratulations. But by the way, Brooklyn, do you all hate malls as much as I do?
Especially Bruce Ratner malls?
I don't care whose malls they are. I just don't like malls. I don't like mall culture. I like to go and shop in real places, many of which they have right here in Brooklyn.
Oh,
hey.
That's nice of you to kiss up to our audience.
Yeah,
and just
I'm kissing up to you. Look, I used to live here. I know a little bit about it.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, you know that if Bruce Ratner actually builds them all over Freddy's Bar.
Uh-oh.
And not the stadium, what he'll do is he'll probably take the chairs and maybe something that was on the wall at Freddy's and just put it on the wall at Bennigan's as a little shrine.
Why? Oh, you mean they don't prefabricate all that stuff they put on the walls of it?
No, they'd make a special case. It's just out of respect.
out of respect for what they tore down.
Yeah, despicable. Yeah. It's despicable, Riley. You know that Shirley Chisholm was from Brooklyn? Did you know that?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely
knew
that.
Did you know that Charles Schumer's from Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And Jackie Robinson played in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Not far from here at Ebbets Field.
Yes.
And let me
see. We got any other ones?
Well, Barbra Streisand was from.
You know, my grandmother lived next to Barbara Streisand. I'm kidding. Everyone.
Yeah, right. Spike Lee is from Brooklyn. Chris Rock is from Brooklyn.
My grandmother lived right next to Spike Lee's family as well.
There you go, Ben.
Every Jew has a grandmother or a grandmother's friend who lived next to Barbara Streisand's family in Brooklyn. Come on, Pashman. I'm sure your mother, Linda, is like, you know, we have a friend who lives next. Folks, we're at the Tea Lounge in Brooklyn. You're listening to Morning Sedition. We're going to come back with Johnny Pastry and much more show. All that's coming up next. DMC from Run DMC. Me and Mark Riley, 57 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America. T-shirts, we got keychains, we got the entire city of Brooklyn is here just about. If you want to know where we are and you want to see it on the internet, go to TLoungeNY.com. And wow, look at this is great.
It is great.
I cannot believe this turnout. Later in the show, we've got Gifford Miller, mayoral candidate Gifford Miller, who's going to come and tell us his strategy to take on the mighty Michael Bloomberg.
That's right. He wants to be the Democratic nominee.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll have something to say. Maybe he'll change our minds. Maybe this could turn it around for him. Could turn it around for Gifford Miller.
Sure could.
That's what I'm thinking. Nelson George, who said absolutely, just sort of half-heartedly. Yes, I think so.
Sure,
I think it's all going to work out for Gifford. Arthur, author and filmmaker Nelson George will be here. Rap pioneer DMC of Run DMC, Daryl McDaniels. We'll be here. Folks, look, you know, let's talk about just General John Abizaid, one of the top commanders in Iraq, who told the Senate Armed Service Committee yesterday that the Iraq insurgency has not grown weaker over the past 6 months. And this, of course, in direct contrast to the vice president of the neocon death cult, Dick Cheney, saying that the insurgency is in its last throes.
Yeah, I think General Abizaid was kind of saying, look, I don't know where Dick Cheney got that from. I'm on the ground, and it's not going down like that. Right now, I mean, at a point, Abizaid said, look, there were gross errors and mistakes. Those are not my words. Those are his words. in the military campaign in Iraq. Gross errors and mistakes.
There's so much confusion coming out of, like, you know, everybody's talking about Iraq. It's mind-blowing. And at the same hearing, Ted Kennedy asked Donald Rumsfeld, I love Ted Kennedy, when he gets worked up.
He's
all red. Yeah. He's like, isn't it time you resign, he said. But dig this. So Rumsfeld says, I offered my resignation twice, right, saying that George Bush refused to accept it. That's his call. So let me understand this. We've got a Secretary of Defense that knows he's not doing a good job. He tried to quit twice, Riley. We've got a president that has no vision or exit strategy and is unwilling to fire him. We've got a big brass commander saying there are more foreign fighters coming in, but the insurgency isn't getting stronger. It's staying the same. And in roughly the same breath, give or take a few, says we're seeing progress in Iraq and Afghanistan, despite the fact that the death toll, certainly for Iraqis, is higher than it's ever been. And there was a firefight in Afghanistan that downed an American helicopter 2 days ago. Not to mention some top military personnel saying that this war is unwinnable through military means. Last week, Lieutenant Colonel Frederick P. Wellman, who works with the task force overseeing the training of Iraqi security troops, said of the insurgency, quote, we can't kill them all. When we kill one, I create three. So to top it all off, we've got a vice president that calls all this the last throws. The neocon death cult says no timetable for troop withdrawal, though they had no trouble withdrawing billions of dollars in cash-filled duffel bags out of Iraq. But troops, no. They say we'll be there until the Iraqis can defend themselves against themselves, which will never happen as long as we are there. So let me get this straight. We're going to be there permanently managing a quagmire-ish civil war slash jihadist nightmare at the cost of American and Iraqi lives because these idiots are too stubborn and getting too rich to admit they are clueless or to care. Just so I understand, no rosy glasses here. Are you there, Joseph Heller? It's me, Mark.
You know, you kind of hit the nail on the head with that. And remember, there's still $8.8 billion in Iraq reconstruction money that is unaccounted for.
$8.8 billion.
Think of what that could do to New York City. What it could do for hiring teachers across the country. Hiring whatever, police, fire, rebuilding roads, rebuilding transit systems. It could do all of that. And where is it going? I don't know.
$8.8 billion. I think that's exactly the amount that Michael Bloomberg carries in two wads in his pocket. What do you need?
He's a rich guy. You need to stay there.
How do you explain that? His appeal to Democrats? I mean, because a lot of Democrats are going to vote for Bloomberg. A lot of people think he did a great job for the city. What do you think?
Well, look, Michael Bloomberg is a figure who is not nearly as polarizing, racially or otherwise, as his predecessor, Rudy Giuliani, who managed to polarize this entire city for 8 years. So I think a break from Rudy is what New Yorkers ended up wanting. And since the city has not fallen apart in the wake of September 11th, a lot of people are giving Michael Bloomberg the credit. Now, we'll see what happens. We'll see how many people actually turn out to the polls this November when people have to choose between Michael Bloomberg and whoever the Democrats end up nominating.
And
we'll
Gifford Miller, who will be here momentarily.
He'll be trolling for your vote, folks.
So there are a lot of big stories in the news this week, so I think it's time to get some bets down with our Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, buddy? Where is the action, man?
It follows me, baby!
All right, what do you got?
All right, nice to be here in Brooklyn. I see a lot of familiar faces in the house. I'll be around a little later to collect. You, when did you get out? Unbelievable.
Yeah,
all right, here we go.
What do you got, man?
All right, so I got more action than the Gay Pride Parade after party, so let's get going.
So you're pro-gay, Johnny?
Gay, straight, doesn't matter to me. It's all action, baby.
So can we call you Johnny Gay Street?
No.
Okay, so what's hot this week? What do you got, Johnny?
Impeaching George Bush. That's my action, baby. Oh, yeah. I'm taking big impeachment action.
All right.
That Downing Street memo should say pay to the order of Johnny K Street on it. I'm going to make more money off that hick than Halliburton. You know what I'm saying?
Now, what kind of odds are we looking at here, Johnny?
Well, the odds are changing a lot on this, you know? They set it off 10 to 1. Uh-huh. By the end of the sentence, they could be down to 5 to 1. By the end of the show, even money. You know what I'm saying?
Put me down for 5 large, Johnny.
You're down.
All right. Put me down for 5 too, bro.
5?
Yeah, why not?
You must be making a lot of money at those bananas, watermelons places, wherever the hell you work. Say hello to Vincenzo for me.
Oh, my God. Put me down for another 5, man.
All right.
So what do you got, man? So what kind of, what other action are we looking at?
Okay, here's
tonight?
A golden
all right, what do you got?
Osama bin Laden. Anyone
sure.
remember him?
Sure.
Yeah, all right. You know, the CIA capo, Porter Goss, whatever the hell his name is. I say CIA, I get a little nervous. I don't know if you know what I mean, but he says he knows where bin Laden is hiding.
Okay.
Let me tell you something. If you owe my people money, we would have found him in 88. The Osama been broken at this point. Now, 20-1, he's in Pakistan. 10-1, he's in Afghanistan. Even money's with my cousin, Freddie Flatbush Avenue, who's in the witness protection program. We haven't been able to find him for years.
Give me 10 units on the 50-1.
50-1. Looks like someone robbed a bank, for God's sake.
5 units said he's in Afghanistan.
You're down. You're more down than Bush's poll numbers. Come on.
Hey, Johnny, you're a big Hillary Clinton supporter, huh? What about that new biography by Edward Klein that slams the woman?
Yeah, let's just say I'm on it, all right, if I may?
Yeah.
If Eddie Klein wants to write another biography, let's just say he's going to have to learn to type with his toes. You know what I'm saying? You don't pick on Hillary. Odds of recovery, 50-1.
All right.
Odds of Klein having another accident if he opens his big gap again, that's even money. That's a good bet. Put some money down on that. Let's just say Christmas came early to Brooklyn. You
all
can
right.
make some money on
all
that.
Right, I'm going to put 10 G's on that, Johnny.
10 G's?
Why
right.
do I always pull my wallet out when I'm doing it? All right.
You don't pull your wallet out enough, if you know what I mean.
All right, Johnny, you know, Klein is a bum. Give me 5 on that for sure. What else you got for us, Johnny?
All right, well, I'm going to do something I don't usually do, Martin.
All right.
I'm going to give you some money.
Uh-oh. What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Here's the shirt off my back right here.
What are you doing?
I heard you talking about Camp Air America. Here, between you and me here.
All right, thanks, buddy. I can't believe we're acting it out. That's very nice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that really is nice of you, Johnny. Did you go to camp when you were a kid?
Yeah, I went to camp. You know, a bunch of kids and guys in the neighborhood chipped in. They sent me to camp.
Yeah.
What? Gambling camp, they said. It was a Sands Las Vegas youth outreach program. Best week of my life. Blackjack, craps, roulette. I was 12. They let me drink as much as I wanted. Things were different back then. You know
like
what I'm saying?
Camp. I don't think that's the same camp we're sending these kids to. I don't know.
That was fun, though. I mean, right. I learned some very important lessons there, though. I remember one night around 4 a.m., Frank Sinatra came up to me and said, "Kid, don't hit on 16. You know, so that's a lesson that's bode me well the rest of my life. I'll
there
tell you that. Anyhow, I got to get to Court Street and make some collections.
All right, Johnny.
I'm out of here.
Thank you, Johnny. Johnny K Street. Frank Sinatra coming to his camp to give gambling. Thanks for the $2 for the kids. That's big of you. $2. That's big, man. Yeah, okay. That's great, man.
Yeah,
Johnny
man.
K Street. So, folks, we got DMC from Run DMC coming up. We got Nelson George is going to be here. Gifford Miller, mayoral candidate, is going to be here. We're at T-Lounge here in Park Slope, Brooklyn at Union Street and 7th Avenue. Come on down. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio, 16 past the hour.
Yeah.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich. Remember me? I helped preside over the greatest economic expansion in our nation's history, creating over 20 million new jobs during Clinton years. I'm sorry to hear that the Bush administration has either outsourced or eliminated your job entirely. But while you're waiting for things to turn around, stay tuned to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Give me back my job.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services. 1-800-828-1200. That's
1-800-828-1200. Going on past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio, coming to you live from the T-Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn. We're at Union Street and 7th Avenue. Come on down. We're giving away coffee, T-shirts, tickets, cool stuff. Go to T-LoungeNY.com if you want more information.
Yeah.
Man, what a day it's been. Coming up, we got Gifford Miller, New York City Council Speaker and Democratic mayoral candidate, to tell us how he's going to fix things. But right now, the Bible's book of Revelation portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milfington. of the recently disgraced diocese of insert any town here, Texas. Your grace.
Lay down your tasty flesh biscuits, ye teetotaling reapers of God's hot infused vengeance. Turn my mic up, damn it. Why aren't you people at work? Lay down your tasty flesh biscuits, ye teetotaling reapers of God's hot infused vengeance. Gather round, ye eaters of organic nuts, lickers of toads, and that guy, old guy next door with the big bay window. Stop exercising in the nude, Grandpa. I can't stop looking. Time to hear my proclamation, idolaters. For your rose petal macaroons have become festooned with ladybug sluts. And your carnally focused lives will surely bring you an eternity of pain in the bottom level of Satan's three-tiered tea tray of hell. In short, uh-oh. You may recall of how thrice abdominals go, I spake it upon you about a cat in Oregon that was born with three heads.
Mm.
The weekend after that, I told you how a man was fatally struck in the head by a shot put at the U.S. Track and Field Championships.
Yeah.
The weekend after that, I told you if you want to go show off your freaky three-headed cat, don't be doing it where people are trying to throw shot puts. The Raptors 9, naysayers, and it's they, naysayers. According to a report by the USGS, United States Geological Survey, or Underworld Scientists Gathered for Sin, a colossal Midwestern earthquake that 200 years ago reversed the course of the Mississippi River could happen again soon. This is a sure sign of the apocalypse, Mark. For only Satan would reverse the course of the Mississippi River and find a way to make innocent boaters go through Arkansas twice. Mark?
Yeah.
Mark?
Yes.
Where?
Here.
Evidence shows tremendous pressure is building at a fault near Memphis. Scientists say Memphis hasn't seen this much strain since that fateful day in 1977 when Elvis tried to pass a meatloaf. That's not all, hamster breath. Let's see if I can simplify it for you. Tennessee had a magnitude 8.1 earthquake in 1812, right?
Yeah.
You have 8.1. Subtract 1 from 8. You get a 7.
Yeah.
Then take the year 1812, add 2 ones plus the numeral 2 to get 4.
Right.
Then subtract the number 4 from the remaining 8 to get a 4.
Uh-huh.
Take that 4, the previous 7, and you get the number 7-4.
7-4, yeah.
Follow along, Mark. You people are good at math.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying.
Now take magnitude 8.1 again.
Right.
Only add the two numbers to get a 9.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
What you have left is so diabolical, so frightening, it makes me hard just thinking about it. That's right. The numbers 9 and 74. Mark, what happens when you multiply these two numbers?
You get 666, the mark of the beast.
Well, you're right. I was going to say it was just a bunch of meaningless crap and walk off in embarrassment.
What exactly does all this mean, Cardinal?
I have no idea, Mark. I only know that it was prophesied in Revelation 8 is enough. And I quote it. For the day will come when the western tectonic plates of Jesus will collide with the eastern Ivy League satanic plates, resulting in the new states of Wisconsin Soda, Arkentucky, and the massive territory of Kirstie, Alabama. This will be preceded by lots of suggestive rubbing and friction. End quote. Well, there you have it, you tea-slurping monkeys. God hates natural watershed drainage basins and Mark Twain. That's a little technical thing there. Well, none of that matters now, because soon I'll be up in heaven drinking fruit punch with Jim Jones and jamming with Clara Where's the Beef Peller. Until then, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you. In hell!
Thank you, Cardinal. Welcome.
Thank you.
That was deep, profound as always. Very funny.
I'll see you at Bananas.
Yeah.
I always go nuts at Bananas.
Yeah. You're going to come down to Bananas, are you?
I'm going to go insane at Bananas.
Okay. Yeah, I remember the day when you used to do stand-up. Remember that, Jim?
Oh. Yeah, I remember that.
What happened to that stand-up thing? Did you just, you just got scared eventually?
Well, you know, we'd have to follow you and you poisoned the crowd.
Oh! Yeah, see you later, man. It's
all right.
Nice to see you, man. Good job.
Bye.
General and Cardinal Milfington. So the Jim Earls, the Air America Jim Earls, kicked some butt last night. Is that you?
Yeah.
What, you beat the nation softball team 19-3?
Yeah.
Look, if they were confused, the liberals are like, wait, are we supposed to hurt ourselves? Like, okay, it's good.
Well,
all right, we're going to be back. We got Nelson George. We got Gifford Miller, New York City Council Speaker. And much more. It's Morning Tradition with Mark and Mark at the Key Lounge in Brooklyn, 27 past the hour, Air America.
Yeah.
Morning Tradition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America.
News. Humorous
The Randy Rhodes Show. Great talk, less filler. On Air America Radio.
DMC of Run DMC, Daryl McDaniels, coming up a little later. Author and filmmaker Nelson George. But right now, he's one of our four mayoral candidates seeking the Democratic nomination to run against Mayor Bloomberg. He's currently New York City Council Speaker. Please welcome Gifford Miller to the show. Good morning.
Yeah. Morning.
Good morning. Thanks for coming down. I guess right out of the gate, since the Supreme Court has just made it easier, if you were mayor, would you have signed off on Radnor Stadium out here in downtown Brooklyn?
Radnor Stadium?
Mm-hmm.
I support the concept of building thousands of units of affordable housing on Atlantic Yards. And if it comes along with an arena, I'm okay with that. What we the most important crisis that we have in the city after schools is affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
But now, is the plan that they have now for affordable housing satisfactory to you?
No, I think clearly this needs to go through a public process and it needs to be improved. There's a density issues. There's a question of how much affordable housing. There's a question of what the public money is going for. There's a lot of issues that need to be answered still. But overall, I think we need to put something there, and affordable housing is our biggest problem.
What do you think? I think a lot of people have a problem with exactly what politicians mean when they say affordable housing. I mean, what is affordable housing to you? I mean, is it like $1,000 a month for a two-bedroom? Is it $2,000, $3,000? What is affordable?
Well, I think that's a great point, and one of the things that does need to get worked out in this plan or in any plan. There needs to be a range of affordable housing. A lot of people are struggling who are making $80,000, $90,000 a year to find housing that they can afford for their families, but they're not struggling as much as people that are making $20,000, $25,000 a year. And so we need to make sure there is a mix. This is one of the proposals on the table is for this to have a very significant low-income proponent. And so that's very important because we have a lot of low-income people that are really struggling. Look, in the end, this is a tough choice. Affordable housing is not an easy issue because, in the end, it's an expensive problem. And the only way that you're going to create more affordable housing is you're going to have more housing as well, which comes along with its own kinds of problems because then you have schools and transportation issues and other things that are there. But for me, everything flows from having a home that you can have for your family, and we need tens and tens and tens of thousands of affordable housing units, and we still would be barely beginning to meet the need.
Yeah, it's scary now. If people come up to you, it's like, I got a great deal on the studio, like $2,500.
Yes.
Like, what the hell is that? And, like, you can't even – I moved to Astoria, you know, and a lot of people – I mean, Brooklyn, the prices are going up. I've always had this weird question about Manhattan. It's like, where the hell is all the money coming from? You can't get an apartment, a studio for under $2,000. It's like, who the hell are these people? Are they coming from the planet money? Where are they coming from?
It reminds me of the old Yogi Berra joke. You know, they say the old thing about that restaurant, nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. And housing's like that. No one can pay for it anymore. Everyone's paying too much.
But I never understand, how there can be no affordable housing in New York. And now let's talk about Bloomberg because he's way ahead. You know that? I don't want to burst the bubble.
He doesn't want to jinx you.
Yeah, maybe you're not paying attention to that kind of thing.
You know what? I've got to tell you, my mother and my my wife tell me that I'm doing great.
Good for her.
Yeah.
My head.
There you go.
There's one vote.
But now,
Actually, I got both of them. Thank you. Don't stop me short. I'm going to get both of those votes. I got them locked down, and they're voting for me.
But Speaker Miller, now, you've got a situation where, you know, the West Side Stadium did not happen. You opposed it, but it seems like it has not really hurt the mayor politically, if you believe the latest polling. He said, judge him on education. People were hitting him on education. Then the test scores came out, and they said the scores had gone up 15%. Are you running out of issues that you can hit him with here?
Well, first of all, I think his record on education has been a failure, and I don't care what those last test score. Well, I care what the last test score says. I mean, if they are up all across the board. We're up lower than any other major city in the state. And the bottom line is that the worst part is that he has no positive vision for how to move our educational system forward. This is a mayor who's not talking about lowering class sizes. He's not figuring out how to attract and retain quality teachers. He's not making our schools safer. He's not extending after-school programs. What he's doing is pouring his money into test preparation, test preparation, test preparation. But he's not really educating our kids. You know, last year that 81% of eighth graders flunked the social studies exam. 81%. I spent a whole year last year teaching in an eighth grade social studies class in Long Island City. And I'll tell you, I'm not surprised by that number. Kids are not prepared for a really rigorous exam that covers, you know, some science, some math, some reading. Social studies is a great question.
I'm trying to figure out what social studies is. I remember it vaguely. What does that cover? It's not history.
It's sort of history and it's politics, government. It's sort of, you know.
Yeah, I didn't do good in that.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're in America, frankly.
Lincoln freed the slaves.
Hey, wait a minute, buddy. So now, what about this? There's an issue of you fought to keep a garbage transfer station away from the Upper East Side neighborhood that you live in, and now it's in the most waste management is in what you would call affordable housing, poorer neighborhoods. you know, how are we going to deal with that waste issue in the city?
Well, that's actually not true. I actually proposed there to be a transfer station in my neighborhood, and I proposed 4 transfer stations for Manhattan instead of 3.
We're not just talking about garbage cans, though.
We're talking about trucks coming through, and there's no question. Look, Manhattan needs to handle its own garbage, and it needs to reduce the commercial waste it's sending to other boroughs. What I'm fighting for is to have an actual plan. A plan that will actually increase recycling, reduce waste, and reduce commercial waste. What the mayor is giving us is a bunch of promises. And I'm going to keep fighting until we get an actual plan in place because this is a serious issue. It's costing us a lot of money, and people are suffering.
Okay, let's go to some questions for Speaker Miller from our audience. Jonathan Larson has some people here with some questions. John, who's this?
First up, we have Dave Robinson from Carroll Gardens wants to talk about something in the news nationally lately.
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Morning. Nice
love
to see you.
Love America. Thank you
very
so
much.
For doing. Speaker Miller, I wanted you to speak about the war in Iraq as a local issue in New York City. You know, with Rove's latest comments as the most recent example, exploitation of New York for, you know, the war in Iraq, and maybe you can talk about the aggressive recruiters, the strain on military families, and billions of unbudgeted dollars. You know, we have a special relationship with the war in Iraq. I'd like your comments on that, please.
Well, we do have a special relationship with the war in Iraq. We in the city council actually held an unprecedented public discussion and debate on the question of the war about a week before we went to war in the city council chambers, and we voted on a resolution that I voted for to oppose going to war at the time that President Bush took us to war. And I did so at the time because I said that I thought that this was unnecessary, that there hadn't made the case that there was a real imminent threat, that it was the wrong use of our resources, and that we would be stuck in a very long and dangerous involvement in a country that we didn't need to be stuck in a long, dangerous involvement. And I tell you, ever since, we now open every city council meeting with moments of silence if there have been New Yorkers who have been killed over in Iraq in the period between the previous stated city council meeting, the full city council meeting. And I got to tell you, way more often than not, we're opening our meetings with moments of silence for one or two New Yorkers who we've lost in this conflict. And I think our president has done us an enormous disservice with this war. He's cost us lives. He's cost us billions of dollars. He hasn't, in my opinion, hasn't advanced our cause around the world, and I oppose it.
great.
Sultana Adams lives in Weehawken. She works in Manhattan, and she's got a question about New York City specifically.
New Jersey.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd just like to note, because in terms of diversity, the fire department in the city of New York is among the worst in the nation, and I'd just like to know what you plan to do about that.
That's a good question, because there is no issue with the point that the fire department is unbelievably non-diverse. I was meeting with the Vulcan Society a couple of nights ago, which is the African-American firefighters, and it's way too small a group. What I think we need to do about it is we need to diversify the fire department. There are a number of things that we can do in order to do that. First of all, we can spend more money, time, and effort in actually recruiting. We can make sure that there really is a real incentive for residency. Right now there's a 5-point incentive on residency for the test, but what happens is basically everybody just takes an address in New York City, and then so everyone ends up with the 5-point residency. We ought to find a way to really create real incentives for residency. And then we have to expand one very successful program that's worked in the past that this administration and the previous administration has stopped, which is the CUNY Cadet Program. This is a program that works by getting kids into a CUNY program that then tracks them into the firefighter service and it helps get them a degree. It's a very successful program. We right now in the budget, we're negotiating a budget right now, and this is one of the issues that we're at odds with the mayor on, because we want to put more money towards recruitment, put more money towards this CUNY Cadet program, and try to really make some difference in terms of the diversity of fire departments. It's unacceptable where we are today.
Thanks for your question. Hey, it's a pleasure meeting you. I've enjoyed saying your name all week, even though not knowing who you were, I just like the name Gifford Miller.
Well, thank you.
And I kid because I love. But let's be honest. How is Bloomberg beatable? I mean, people seem to like this guy. He's got a lot of momentum. Come on.
Look, I'm not sure. I mean, look, almost any other elected official going into a reelection campaign who can't crack 50 against a bunch of relatively unknown candidates is considered to be in considerable trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason that the mayor isn't cracking 50, and the reason is that New Yorkers understand what's happened in the last 3.5 years. And not that the city's fallen apart. Look, he's a mediocre caretaker mayor.
Hey,
what?
Ooh.
There you go.
Ooh.
But
those are fighting words. Just give me
I actually think that's relatively generous.
That's
I'm not saying anything. You know, normally people say their opponents are evil and that they destroyed everything. I'm not saying everything's falling apart in the city of New York. But what we deserve out of a mayor is somebody who's going to actually go out and tackle the tough problems that are facing our city. And this mayor lacks a positive vision to deal with almost any tough problem that's facing our city. On education, his answers are at best bureaucratic reshuffling and test preparation. On economic development, his answers are, let's go get the Olympics. That's not a plan, that's a prayer.
Right.
What we deserve is somebody who's going to stand up and fight for us and deal with these really strong issues. And I think that the Democratic Party is going to win this city back when we start offering real positive alternatives. When we say to people, look, your lives are going to get better, and here's how. Your kids are going to get a better education, and it's because I have a specific plan to lower class sizes in kindergarten through third grade to 17 kids in a class by extending the personal income tax on people making more than $500,000 a year. You know, we're gonna improve a small business in this city by saying insurance companies in the city that pay no taxes. You know, insurance companies pay no taxes in New York City. If we taxed insurance companies, we could cut taxes for businesses across the board, and particularly for small businesses, because who's creating jobs in this city? Not insurance companies. Small businesses are creating jobs in this city. And I have a specific plan for how to do that. We're going to stand up and we're going to do something about the fact that we're sending $24 billion more to Washington and Albany than we get back every year.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go out and we're going to make people's lives better. And the Democratic Party has to be about the future again in this city and not about the past. And I think we can do it.
All right. Gifford Miller's got a plan, folks.
There you go.
New York City Council Speaker and Democratic mayoral candidate. Thank you for being here.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, guys. I'm going to get back to Robotron.
Yeah, there you go.
Get out the Robotron machine. We're broadcasting live at the Tea Lounge in Parkville, Brooklyn. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Personal injury claim and have no place else to turn for the money. Call Whitehaven Funding at 1-800-559-6805. Call today.
All right,
51, 52, past the hour, folks, for its morning tradition on Air America Radio.
Yeah.
Coming to you live in the D Lounge in Boxwell, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. Man, what a day. A lot of people. We got free coffee. We're giving stuff away. We're about to talk to author Nelson George here in just a second. You know what? Let's get right into it, actually. Nelson George is the author of Post Soul Nation. This is his new book. He's also the producer of HBO's Everyday People, which showcases the effects of gentrification on one restaurant in downtown Brooklyn. He's also Brooklyn's own. Please welcome Nelson George to our show.
Yeah. How you doing, Nelson?
Very strange.
Live.
Usually up this early in Brooklyn.
Oh, now see that.
So you grew up here? You spent your whole life here?
I'm Brooklyn born and Brooklyn bred.
There you go.
I was just I was reading on your website about the changes in Fort Greene that you were talking about. And a lot of them
I did a piece that was in the Times last mm-hmm. Sunday in the Brooklyn section, which is very funny. The city section became the Brooklyn section last week. And I shouldn't really say this, but I guess I'm on Air America.
Yeah, go ahead.
I did a piece, you know, about Fort Greene. I've been in Fort Greene 20 years. Actually, 20 this month.
Yeah, Fort Greene. Yeah.
But they took out most of the stuff about gentrification I wrote.
What?
Yeah. There was a whole sort of opening section about gentrification that got kind of cut out.
What was the angle? Why'd they cut it?
Well, just, you know, this piece was too long.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But
sure.
You want to say which editor on the air?
No. I mean, but ultimately, I've lived in the neighborhood 20 years, literally. I came in 85, and to see where it is now, it's changed more in probably the last 4 years than the previous 16.
In a bad way?
Well, for me, you know, it's a major transition. Mm-hmm. I mean, the neighborhood started in the 80s. It was a low income. There was a project, these fantastic brownstones, undervalued. There was a lot of crime. But there's this wonderful artistic community blossoming.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Spike Lee being the centerpiece of it, but Branford and Wynton Marsalis lived there. Wesley Snipes, Larry Fishburne. It was an amazing group of people.
Yeah.
And out of that came kind of a renaissance.
Yeah. And that's all gone, or they are...
Well, they've all moved out. They've all moved to New Jersey. but now we have another... There's newbies and oldies, and you can see the newbies versus the oldies. Everybody who used to live in Chelsea...
Uh-huh.
And now in Mary Hill, now live in Fort Greene, basically.
So it's a big week out there, you're saying? Gay Pride Week.
No, not yet.
Okay. Not yet, but soon. Nelson, what about this arena that they want to build in?
I'm surprised. I got to tell you, no one asked Gifford Miller here in Brooklyn about that arena.
No,
we did.
What did he say?
He said affordable housing was his primary concern. If the stadium came with affordable housing, then he was okay with it.
The stadium is a disaster for Brooklyn.
Uh-oh.
The stadium, I'm totally opposed. I live two blocks from where they're going to build it, so I'm very intimately engaged in this idea.
Yeah.
The traffic, the noise, the strip clubs.
Strip clubs?
Sports arenas bring what, guys?
Strip clubs.
Thank you.
Men.
Men, bars. There's going to be a lot of street traffic. All those wonderful brownstones in the area around it are going to see a lot of people, drunk people, African
idiots. Yeah.
It's going to be the quality of life in that section of Brooklyn, despite what they're telling you, is going to go down. And this is after 20 years of development where you're seeing the brownstone neighborhoods have blossomed.
Yeah.
They become the centerpiece of what's great about this borough.
Mm. It's beautiful.
And they're going to be undercut profoundly by the stadium. Believe me.
Yeah, stadiums and malls destroy every neighborhood, like cancer.
I mean, also, I don't know if folks remember, they've been building a lot around the Atlantic Terminal.
Yeah.
The rat infestation, people, rats coming. I'm telling you, it was a terrible, terrible experience when they built these new, the Target, where the Target is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's just a mini microcosm of what's going to happen when they build this stadium.
Oh, my God. Nelson, let's switch gears very quickly and talk about Biggie Smalls. There's a trial going on now, a lawsuit alleging, among other things, that the LAPD might have had some hand in Biggie's death.
Well, this theory has been around a long time. There was a group called the Ramparts Division.
Yes.
Which was basically...
Rogue.
It was L.A. Confidential circa 1990s.
Yeah.
And these guys did all kinds of stuff. They were also intimately connected with Suge Knight and the Bloods. Several of the LAPD officers were active Bloods.
Moonlighting cops.
Absolutely. They would do security work, but they'd be wearing the colors of the Bloods, and they identified as much as the Bloods as they did with the LAPD. The theory is that they were employed to assassinate Biggie Smalls.
Well, how come none of them have been charged yet?
Well, they've been charged for a number.
most of the people who are under investigation in this lawsuit from Ms. Wallace's family, from the Wallace family, a lot of them are already in jail.
But not on this.
Not on this, no, no. But, I mean, the theory of the civil suit, which has just been filed, is that the LAPD suppressed this evidence in order to basically prevent an L.A. Confidential type scandal.
We're talking to author and filmmaker Nelson George. We're going to continue this because there's a lot of theories about, you know, there's different angles on this, and it's unclear. So we're going to talk more about Biggie Smalls. We'll talk a little bit about your book, Postal Nation. It's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It's 6 past the hour, you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley, we're broadcasting. We're broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. Free coffee. Oh my God, this is crazy. This is crazy. We're waiting for Lawton Smalls to drop by. Right now we're in the middle of a conversation with Nelson George, the author of Post Soul Nation. We got books right here. We might give away a couple in a couple of minutes. Nelson George is also the producer of HBO's Everyday People, which showcases the effects of gentrification in one restaurant in downtown Brooklyn. His Brooklyn's own, Nelson George. Still
there
here.
You go.
We're getting into the discussion of Biggie Smalls, who reinvigorated the East Coast rap scene, was from Brooklyn.
Right.
And was...
Not very far from here, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah. Where is he from exactly from here?
Right across Fulton Street by the A-Train on... Clinton, Washington? Oh,
was it Clinton, Washington, or Cumberland? Somewhere up there.
Oh, that way, yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea myself. We get... Exactly. A lot of different voices are saying different things, so we can. That makes perfect sense.
We sorted that.
Close.
So he was killed, gunned down 10 years ago. It's not clear who did it. There's a lot of speculation. Some people I've read say that Suge Knight had both of them killed, Tupac and Biggie. I've heard that there was two gang theories. There's a lot of theories. Which theory do you...
Well, basically, the Biggie-Tupac thing is the JFK for the hip-hop generation.
Okay.
They view it as conspiracy theories. Tupac's not dead.
Yeah.
There's a whole group of... He's in Mexico.
With Elvis and Jim Morrison?
Exactly.
Okay.
The truth is, it's very doubtful that Suge had anything to do with Tupac's death. He was in the car with him when he was shot. Someone sprayed the car with automatic weapon fire. Unless... It's just very unlikely that if you want to have someone killed, you'd be in the line of fire.
Fire
with them.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I think that goes out the window. And that's part, actually, of the Wallace lawsuit, civil suit.
The family of Biggie Smalls is basically going after the LAPD for a cover-up.
Right.
Okay.
And, there are things in it that are questionable. There's evidence in it that suggests there might have been something, but it's been 10 years. Unless someone comes forward and really just says, I did it, or I was involved in this conspiracy, it's going to be very hard to prove that right now.
And that happens so often.
Exactly.
But Nelson, I mean, we're talking about 10 years. We're talking about two icons of hip-hop who are both dead, and neither or none of their killers have been brought to justice. Do you ever think that'll happen? I mean, never mind the lawsuit. Do you think anyone will be charged and eventually locked up for it?
I mean, look what happened. How is it 40 years for this case down in Mississippi, the Civil Rights case? So unless someone comes forward or some evidence that's not, I mean, the FBI has already signed off and said they're not investigating anymore because they think the evidence trail is cold.
Are you sure they're not just afraid of Suge Knight?
That could be it.
I don't know. I think Suge Knight's become everyone's favorite gangster. He's like become the icon of gangsterism in this country.
Yeah.
I don't think he's at all powerful, quite honestly. So I think that
He said it. I just want to make sure that's clear to anyone who's listening in Los Angeles.
Uh-oh.
I think that eventually something will happen. But will both killers actually be absolutely found? I think it's doubtful right now. There's murders all over this country that happen every day that no one knows. They're going to come to trial. This is going to be two of those.
But, I mean, was this a botched police investigation?
Absolutely. I think so. I mean, what they're positing is that there was an LAPD officer who commissioned someone to shoot. There's names. In the lawsuit, they named the officer. They named the shooter.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very specific, so they have some information, but is it information can take the court and prove?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, we'll have to keep our eye on that for the next eternity as to, as to whether or not that justice will be served in that case. Post-Soul Nation, the explosive, contradictory, triumphant, and tragic 1980s as experienced by African Americans, previously known as blacks and before that Negroes, by Nelson George. That's
nice
a
title.
Big title.
Yeah,
big
exactly.
title.
Long title. But you
made that up? It's my Tom Wolfe homage.
Oh, okay.
What's this book cover? What's the
cover says it all. You have Ronald Reagan shaking hands with Michael Jackson in the Rose Garden in 1984. That's the 80s, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a book about the 80s from a sort of an African-American point of view, but Ronald Reagan plays a very big part of it since his decisions, the neoconservative revolution, had a profound impact on what happened to black America.
What are some of the high points you talk about in the book?
High point. Well,
high-low points.
The key word is contradictory.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson, Oprah Winfrey, Bill Cosby, so many superstars. Jesse Jackson's run for president twice.
Yeah.
These were highlights. These were things that had never been accomplished by African Americans before. Same time, a huge, huge creation of what we call now the underclass.
Mm-hmm.
Crack devastated the black community. It took working class neighborhoods and made them really war zones.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the introduction of HIV and AIDS. And people forget, we tend to identify the early days of AIDS with the gays. But there was a lot of connections made. There was a whole thing about Haitians. People forget, Haitians were initially seen as the purveyors of HIV in this country, which sounds ridiculous now.
Yes.
But the Center for Disease Control even said that at one point.
Yeah,
hemophiliacs, heroin addicts, homosexuals, and Haitians.
There's some Christian groups that think you can get AIDS by thinking about it.
I wish that was true for some of them.
Nice. Very, very nice. You know, you've written a lot about popular music throughout your career.
Right.
Where are we at? I mean, is anything any good anymore?
Well, you know what? The music industry is in chaos, and it's still trying to figure out how to market music. So what's happened is that we've gone back to the age of singles. The iPod, the downloading, we've changed from a structure of albums. The album is the definition of an artist. That the Beatles with Sgt. Pepper codified in 67. That's over.
Yeah.
It's about singles again. And so, in a way, it's going back to the early days of rock and roll, which is why the record companies are upset, because albums, you make more money.
That's
right. Yeah. We've been talking to Nelson George. The book is Post-Soul Nation. Can I say the title again?
Yeah.
The Explosive, Contradictory, Triumphant, and Tragic 1980s as experienced by African Americans, previously known as blacks, and before that, Negroes. Nelson George, thanks for being here. It was great talking.
Thanks.
Brooklyn!
We're going to be back with DMC from Run DMC, Daryl McDaniels. We're going to be back with Lawton Smalls. It's 13 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Edition live from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you're listening to Marc Maron and Marc Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. It's Morning Edition on Air America Radio.
That's 1-800-774-7007. The call is free, the information is free, but the knowledge could be priceless. Barclay Financial, mystery solved.
Best the hour. Good morning. Mark Maron here with Marc Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning Edition. You're listening to Air America Radio, broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. You can still come down. There's still a little room. Having a good time. If you want to figure out where exactly it is, you can go to TeaLoungeNY.com. Coming up shortly, we've got rap pioneer Daryl McDaniels, a.k.a. DMC of Run DMC. We'll be here in a few minutes. Right now, I'd like to get into this. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in this alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now here again is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Yeah.
Is this your first time in Brooklyn?
Good morning, Mark. Yes, obviously it's my first time in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
You might as well ask if this is my first time in purgatory. My first time into the frying pan.
All right, okay.
Sizzling.
I get it. So how'd you get here, man?
I got here by the road to perdition.
Mm.
The F train.
No.
I have never been so terrified in my life. You people ride that thing every day? You know, that's how Satan travels.
Oh.
Underground and in the dark. in the dark.
All right. What happened, Martin? I mean, what you worked up about?
Well, all right. You can imagine I was a little bit nervous on the platform down there. I was smelly, full of strange people all around me. So when the train came, I couldn't decide whether to get on or not. So I just stood there holding the closing doors for like 5 or 6 minutes. People said such hateful things.
Wow.
I've never heard such anger.
Really? Imagine that. I wouldn't think that would have happened.
You know, then after I got on, I never saw such a bunch of sad, lost, liberal freaks in all my life. You know,
hey.
No. Folks, you know, not making eye contact. No blinking. You know, they were like lizards out there in the sun.
Come on.
Angry-looking kids in ball caps with the brims that stick straight out. You know, straight out. What's that all about? Everybody listening to headphones, you know? I know what station they were listening to. W-H-E-L-L.
Hey.
Direct contact from Beelzebub.
Well, so how do people get around on Planet Bush?
Oh, totally different story. Uh-huh. I hop in my SUV,
hop in
a little Toby Keith.
Uh-huh.
I got brand new rims. Believe me, my ride is pimp.
Oh.
Okay?
Sounds so
king of the world. Down here, you're scurrying around like a rat.
Oh, come on.
I saw plenty of rats down here, by the way. Enormous. Oh. Thought they were going to eat me. Is that okay?
Come on.
Folks living
dude,
with rats.
Dude,
is that all right?
Lawton, it isn't that bad. Would you just take it easy?
Mark, what? Okay, at one point, I saw a light at the end of the tunnel.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, it's Jesus. He's come. Take me from this evil place.
And I'm taking he didn't come, I guess.
No, Jesus is afraid of Brooklyn, too.
Oh, come on.
You know, if that weren't bad enough, somebody told me this is Gay Pride Week.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the saddest three words in the English language.
Oh, stop it.
On Planet Bush, we have Gay Shame Year.
Oh, say that. Come on.
Every year.
That's not right. Why do you say things like that, Lauren?
Every year. Okay. A bunch of them got on the train and tried to convert me.
No, they didn't.
While I was on the train.
It's not a religion.
Minding my business.
Come on. And how do you know they were gay, Lawton?
Mark, I have the gaydar.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I know the hens from the roosters. All right? There's these skinny little boys laughing and giggling like little girls. They smelled like fancy cologne. Gay Agenda by Calvin Klein.
Oh, stop it.
Everywhere.
Come on, that's wrong.
Metal gay.
They did not. You're making all this up, Lauren.
Oh, I wish I was. Every minute I spend in this liberal, multicultural, permissive, elitist, decadent hellhole is like some kind of bad dream I hope to wake up from. I pray that I'll wake up and look up at the ceiling at my poster of President George W. Two Terms Mandate Bush staring back at me, and everything will be back to normal. Bad dream, Dorothy. You're back in Kansas. You know what I mean?
Well,
I can't leave this place fast enough.
You know what, Lawton?
It was all a dream.
You know what, Lawton?
Dream.
It's too bad, buddy, because you're going to miss the parade.
What do you mean, parade? What are you talking about?
The Gay Pride Parade, Lawton. It's Sunday, and it's the biggest, wildest parade ever.
Parade?
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see all of them parade right into the sewer.
No,
that's what I'd like
Lawton,
to see.
Lawton, listen to me, man. It's fantastic. There are floats and bands. It's
No.
Yes, it's a great time. Everybody dances and they're singing. And no, it's going to be great fun and you're going to miss it.
Stop it. It's a parade?
Yes.
I want to do the parade. I wanted to be in that parade since I was 6 years old. My ticket was Saturday and now I can't go. I love Gloria Gaynor. I love Donna Summer. I made a showgirl costume with yellow ostrich feathers. People say I look just like Sandra Bullock in Miss Congeniality, too. I look just like... I never get to do anything fun because I'm stuck on stupid Planet Bush. It's so stupid. I'm coming out. I want the world to know. Got to
let it
go. I'm coming.
Wow.
Out!
I didn't know you had to play that bad. I hate to stop you from playing this time, but we're going to be all right now. This is a big day.
Yeah.
Oh, God, you all right? Take it easy, man. You all right?
Rats, Mark. I saw a rat the size of a Rottweiler. It had a baby in its teeth. It was coming for me next.
We can't go back there.
Coming
now,
for
Lawton.
Me next. Rats right, everywhere.
Lawton. Goodbye, Lawton. We know who you are.
All right. God loves you. Deal with it.
I don't know, Riley. I think that today was a very monumental day.
I think we may see Lawton this weekend.
But wait, am I wrong, or did Lawton just come out? Did that just happen?
Well, he did the Diana Ross thing. Which,
I mean, I don't know if there's no coming back from that, I don't think.
No.
I think from here on out, this has changed everything. I knew it all along, I've got to say.
Yeah.
But this is a...
Log Cabin Republican action coming up.
When is the parade? It's Sunday?
I believe it's this weekend, yeah.
It's huge. I haven't been there in a couple of years.
It is a gigantic celebration.
You've been going for a long time.
For a long time.
Yeah. Now, has it grown in the years? I mean, when was the last time?
Oh, I mean, it was a relatively small thing to begin with. And there were a couple of years where they actually kind of bumped loggerheads with the city about what route they were going to take and whether or not the city was actually going to let them have it because it had expanded so quickly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it really grew very, very fast.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go down on Sunday then. Who knows what time it starts? Anybody? Noon? All right, Gay Pride Parade on noon on Sunday. I used to go to the one in San Francisco because it's like the entire city just turns into a party.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they have the Dykes on Bikes here? Open? Yeah, they do? That's great.
You name it, they got it here.
And there, I once saw a guy in San Francisco actually had like pierced nipples with nipple rings and a team of dogs hooked up to him. Nanook of the Castro. I wonder if that guy's going to be here. So let's talk about some other good news in the news. After being convicted 40 years to the day of the crime, Circuit Judge Marcus Gordon sentenced 80-year-old former KKK leader and part-time Baptist preacher Edgar Ray Killen to 60 years in prison.
Part-time preacher, full-time racist, and he's going away for the rest of his unnatural life.
So... talk to me again about they chose manslaughter because they didn't think they'd get the murder rap to stick because they don't have the evidence. Isn't that how that works?
Well, yeah. I mean, this was a case that should have been decided on state murder charges 40 years ago. Had they done it then, all of these geeks would have gone to jail for the rest of their natural lives.
And one of the guys, the other seven who were convicted in 64, who only did six, 7 years, what were they convicted of originally?
That was a civil rights violation that they were convicted of. Those were federal charges. The state of Mississippi never brought any murder charges against the guys that were convicted back in 67.
So that's mind-blowing that those guys are still around. And I guess, you know, justice has been served, and it's satisfying that this guy will die in jail. But it's like it's unsatisfying in the sense that there could be four or five guys that were involved in this still out there wandering around acting like they didn't do anything wrong.
Well, I hope that the state of Mississippi doesn't end up having to pay for his oxygen for the rest of his life. That's all I pray for.
All right, we're going to be back with DMC, Daryl McDaniel from Run DMC.
Yeah!
We're going to be back with Pendejo, the revolutionary.
Uh-oh.
It's 27 past the hour. We're at T-Lounge in Brooklyn. You're listening to Air America Radio. It's Morning Tradition with Mark and Mark. Happy Friday.
Yeah!
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Show how righteous we are. We have to show those liberal hippies.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Turning past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yeah.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Tradition. We're coming to you live from the T-Lounge in Parkville, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. Go to T-LoungeNY.com for some more information. DMC from Run DMC will be here shortly. But our good friend from Public Enemy fame, Chuck D, just stopped by.
Yeah.
Chuck D's got a show on Air America Sunday night on The Real. How's that going, man?
It's great. On The Real, my co-host Gia Gorell, and we almost like treat like issues and we treat it like pardon the interruption.
Yeah, okay.
And we learn from the manic pace of Mark and Mark.
Oh, that's just caffeine.
Well, you got to be manic at 11 o'clock at night.
You do. What's up, Brendan?
Yeah. We have somebody in the audience here. I think we want to maybe get on the air.
Who's
our friend Pendejo. The revolutionary. I saw him here. Pendejo, you want to come up?
The guy from Puta?
Uh-oh.
Hey, man. Hey, it's good to see you, buddy. It's good to see you.
Pendejo.
Right, okay. Pendejo. I'm just going to keep calling you that then. Pendejo.
Good. We need to get the name out there for...
For why?
What? For...
Come on.
The Revolution!
Okay, so everybody here, Pendejo was in jail. There was a bit of a mix-up at the Puerto Rican Day Parade, but he's out now, as you see. And you look a little tougher. I got to admit, you look harder.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah,
I noticed it too. Back off, Brooklyn tea sippers. While I was on the inside, I saw things no man should see, like Max Cady in the remake of Cape Fear. I became an animal bent on vengeance.
Dude, you were in the holding cell for like 2 hours.
See, Mark, 2 terrible hours.
Okay. All right, so you're hard now, man, and we've established that. So what's next for the revolution?
Well, Mark, yeah. My recruiting efforts at my apartment building and at City Bakery weren't as successful as I'd hoped.
So it's still just you?
And Stompers.
Your Shih Tzu.
Who cannot be left alone.
Right.
Anyway, while I was surfing the internet...
Which is probably always.
Yes, pretty much, I guess. Am I telling the story here, or are you?
Forgive me, Pendejo. Forgive me.
Online, I read that another Latin revolutionary group that refers to itself as Al-Qaeda.
Okay, Pendejo, Al-Qaeda actually is... Al-Qaeda is actually Middle Eastern, I believe.
Yeah.
Interesting. I suppose now that I wish I had not checked the little box that put me on their mailing list.
That's not your best idea, man, I gotta say.
Anyway, they had a brilliant idea. Recruiting online.
All right, that could work. So where are you gonna start? Did you go to some liberal websites or maybe a radical extremist bulletin boards?
Actually?
Yeah.
Nerve.com. Nerve.com will be the apparatus I will use to bring down the neocons.
Hey, you, Pendejo, you know that's a dating site, right?
On the face of it, yes.
All right, so I assume you've written some kind of Nerve profile of yourself?
Yes, as a matter of fact, you can log on to Nerve.com and search Pendejo68. That's Pendejo68. Again, Pendejo.
Okay, all right, they got it. All right. So you're looking for a certain type of revolutionary, right? Is that?
Yes.
Maybe you can tell us what your profile is, what you're looking for, Pendejo.
The type of revolutionary I'm looking for, let's see. Blonde, blue eyes, 5'11 or taller, 112 pounds or less, no exceptions. Independently wealthy, a Virgo, dancer/actress. Interests include lingerie, modeling, and volunteer work. Must also be a nurturing earth mother who enjoys spooning, cuddling, and making banana walnut pancakes on Sunday mornings. Books read must include the Narnia series, How to Please Your Man, and graphic novels like Constantine. Must love small, noisy dogs who require constant attention. A tolerance for various seasonal skin rashes a plus. And I wouldn't kick her out of bed for playing the clarinet. That's not an innuendo, Mark. I quite enjoy the music of Pete Fountain.
I'm sure you do, Pendejo. Now I can see how you'd want someone like that, but that kind of sounds less like you're trying to recruit revolutionaries and more like you're trying to get a girlfriend, am I...
I don't know what you're talking about. This woman would be an excellent recruit.
But you're a very, very lonely revolutionary, aren't you, Pendejo?
See, Mark.
I've got to be honest with you, man. Those are some pretty tight requirements, and I don't really know if that woman exists, Pendejo.
Okay, I suppose I'd be willing to go up to 116 pounds. Oh, Mark, who am I kidding? I've never touched a woman... Are they soft? Do they tremble when you touch them? Do they squeak?
Oh, calm down, man. Just take it easy. You'll find someone. Just be patient, all right? But like a revolution, a relationship can't be built in a day, all right? Pendejo? So maybe Nerve.com isn't the right recruiting platform. You hear? You okay? You dig?
You're right, Mark.
Okay.
TomorrowMatch.com. I can tell by the pictures alone they're chubbier, less interesting, and more desperate. Viva la Revolucion!
Oh, man. Well, good luck, Pendejo.
All right.
So, sorry, Chuck, we had to get
that. I had to do that.
Sorry, I know you guys are nuts. Apologize for it. I listen to you guys every minute.
Oh, Lord.
So we were talking about Biggie and the case going to trial now. What do you think? What do you think happened?
You're going to ask me about Biggie?
Yeah, I am.
Nelson told you everything you need.
That's
to know.
It. That's all I need to know?
Yes.
All right.
Blame Nelson.
All right.
Read the book.
Well, what have you been doing? Where have you been? What's been going on?
Working on the reel.
Yeah?
Uh-oh. Yes. Yeah. Matter of fact, I think 2 weeks from now, we're going to do a special tribute to CBS 101. Because these are two stations I listen to. I work on Air America, but 101, you know, was a station I used to play, you know, have my kids in the car. Because, you know, you tune the urban stations, it's too grown for them.
Yeah.
Even if they're teenagers.
That's
now,
a nice word, grown.
Yeah. I raised my kids on the Four Tops, you know, if they're in the back seat, you know, they're going to listen to Four Tops and Temptations and stuff like that, and the Allman Brothers.
Because we get the email that says, I was listening to you with my kid, and I was forced to have to explain something I didn't want to explain.
That means I'm talking to the wrong person right now, right? No, let me stop.
But that did ever happen to you when you're in the car with your kid, and they go, what is that?
Of course.
And what do you say usually? That's grown stuff?
Well, number one, it's the radio station got, like, Pastor Gavossier, and then they have the next record, Getting Hot in Here, so I got to take my clothes off. Down to my neck, my crack. I mean, I got to have explanations or turn the station.
There you go.
How do you explain the Gavossier?
Yeah, exactly, right? Especially with three kids in the back all singing it.
Yeah, right. Now, we should let the people that aren't here with us in New York know that CBS FM that Chuck's talking about just went away from oldies and went to jazz, whatever that is.
Right.
It's grown.
Exactly. And for the life of me, I don't understand what Jack means.
It means three more songs than the top 40 station.
Yo, really? All the music from the 80s?
No.
Except for mine?
Three more songs.
Huh? And hate's not a word I like to use, but the music from the 80s?
You hate the music?
I hate the music from the
80s. Billie Jean?
The early 80s. No, there's 5% of the 80s music that I like, but 95% was actually the reason I started to do music in the first place, to destroy that music. So, I mean, you know, all the stuff, you know, ABC and The Cure and all that stuff, you know, like.
Uh-oh.
Like,
yeah, you're talking about Barron's favorite band.
Whoa. Well, there's never a Cure guy, never wore eyeliner.
Chuck, all I got right. Another question for you, though.
No, but I was easy. I had to play the stuff, you know. Water, Screedy Politti, you know,
Screedy Politti?
You had to play them because those are the records that you're getting. And then, you know.
They're on tour with The Cure, and so it ends.
And then the funk bands at the same time. Came out, and then they got all confused trying to be like, you know, the post-disco. Disco was a wonderful music when it first came out, when it had real music, real instruments. Gamble and Huff ushered that scene in.
You used to play in the middle of the night, didn't you, Riley?
I used to go to clubs in the middle.
All right.
They look a lot like the T-Lounge.
Didn't you invent the dance format?
Marcus helped make some of that stuff.
Yeah, a little of it.
But you know, it was one of the reasons when Run-DMC came along, they ushered in a new era of basically cutting it right down to the root and being raw about the music. And they kind of really, Run-DMC was the group that actually made rap music legitimate from an album standpoint.
Oh, yeah, and it was, I mean, the rhythms were just extraordinary. The stuff they used, how they put that stuff together. But, you know, it seems like there's almost a renaissance of some of the old school hip-hop guys. I mean, Dr. Dre's got a new CD coming out. DMC's got a new CD coming out. Master P's got a new CD coming out. What is everybody trying to...
Sorry. Let me stop.
Don't badmouth old person.
Where'd that come from?
Well, I don't, you know, really, I don't, I'm one of those cats that I don't care how much money you make. What does your money got to do with, you know, me liking the music? Yeah. People up there like saying, wow, so-and-so went platinum, so I must buy it. I'm like, that's programming, and I just think that, you know, Alpo goes, you know, double platinum if you want to count dog food cans every 2 weeks. I don't see the owner of Alpo walking around with diamond-encrusted dog food cans around the neck talking about We went double platinum on dog food this week, so you got to get a couple of cans, even if you ain't got a dog.
So we're talking to Chuck D. We're
you like it or you don't.
Yeah. We're going to come back with Daryl McDaniels, a.k.a. DMC.
Yeah.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, live from the Q Lounge in Brooklyn. It's Air America Radio. It's 44 past the hour.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.